Welcome to Through the Bible with Les Feldman, a 30-minute walk through the Scriptures, teaching in-depth Bible truths that change people's lives. Now, here's your host, Les Feldman.
Okay, well, it's good to see everybody back so quick, and we're going to get out of here early today if we keep this up. So, again, we just want to make our television audience feel right at home. And like I told someone in the studio before one of our programs this afternoon, I had a letter or phone call from a gentleman who heard me refer to previous letters that say they feel like they're sitting on the back row. This guy says, not me, I'm sitting on the front row right beside that gal with the red hair. So we appreciate the fact that you just make yourself at home with us, because that's all we are, is just an informal Bible study, and we just have a good time searching the Scriptures together. So if you're ever headed towards Tulsa on usually the first Wednesday after the first Sunday of the month, why try to make it in and enjoy the day with us. Okay, we're in the book of Esther. It's a little different Bible study than what I've been normally doing. I hope I'm not losing you. But on the other hand, I felt it was too good a book that's just sort of laying back there. Nobody ever studies it. And the primary reason I'm doing this is because, as we're seeing again right now today, we've got this fellow in Iran who is just bound determined that every Jew be thrown into the sea. Well, it's nothing new. This is the satanic effort to interrupt God's prophetic program. And remember, prophecy could never be fulfilled if Israel is not in their homeland. They have to be there, because when Christ returns, where is he going to return to? Well, not New York or Washington or Tokyo. He's going to return to the Mount of Olives, which is in Jerusalem. And so it's prophetic. It has to happen. And Satan is never going to... Somebody called the other day and said, is Satan ignorant? Is he stupid? Why can't he understand he can't win? That is a good question. Satan evidently still thinks he can win. But he can't, because prophecy has set all this in concrete, as I like to say, and they have to happen. So my number one reason for teaching this book of Esther, to not just fill up book 69, but to make the point that Satan never stops trying to destroy the nation of Israel. It's happened over and over, all the way back into antiquity and back into recent history, and now even today. The world in general would just as soon see every Jew disappear. And that's why I'm always reminding my classes here in Oklahoma, and I might as well remind my television audience, you pray. You pray for our president. I don't care whether it's a Democrat or a Republican in the White House. You pray for them, that they will maintain our stand with Israel. You know, I'm telling everybody lately, send a message to the White House. Remember Harry Truman. And Harry Truman proved that if you do what God wants you to do, he'll end up blessing you. And for those of you who may not know what I'm talking about, you see, in the spring of 1948, when he was at the bottom of the polls, he didn't stand a Chinaman's chance, as we say, winning the election in the fall, and all his advisors, every member of his cabinet, every member of Congress begged him not to stand up with this little emerging nation of Israel while they were still fighting for their independence. And then I trust you all know the story. When Ben-Gurion announced to the world that Israel was now a sovereign state, Harry Truman was the first major player on the stage of history to declare America will stand with this little nation of Israel, and we will defend her. We will do everything we can to help her make it. Well, you see, that was in May of 1948, and in November, you all know your history, Harry Truman beat Thomas Dewey hands down, and I maintain all because, against all of his advisors, against all the media of the day, Harry Truman did what was right, and he stood up for Israel, and I feel that this is still appropriate today. So you pray for our men in high places. You pray for the nation of Israel, because they have to be there. Otherwise, prophecy can't be fulfilled. All right, so now then I'm going to go back to Esther again with that premise that here we have another opportunity that Satan thinks he can destroy the nation to the last little boy and girl. They were to have no mercy to kill every Jew in the empire. All right, so we were down at chapter 4, and I'm going to read again the last part of verse 14, because this is exactly what it boiled down to, where Mordecai tells Esther, "Who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom as a queen in a place where she can really get something done? Who knoweth but that thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this to stop the obliteration of the Jewish people?" All right, so verse 15, "Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer, Go gather all the Jews that are present in Shushan, fast for me, neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in to the king, which is not according to the law." In other words, she could not go in unless he would invite her. But she's going to make the move, and he could have just as well made the decree to kill her or to take her out of the way. Verse 17, "So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded. Now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel." She's going to get dressed to the hilt. "And she stood in the inner court of the king's house over against his house. And the king sat upon his royal throne in his royal house over the gate against the gate. And it was so when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter," which of course was the custom. You've seen it in movies, I know you have, where the king would appoint whoever touched the scepter to come into his presence. All right, so then verse 3, the king said, here it comes now, we're setting the stage to reverse everything against this Amalekite Haman. "So the king said, What wilt thou, Queen Esther, and what is thy request? It shall be given to thee, even to the half of the kingdom. And Esther answered, If it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day into the banquet that I have prepared." Now, she's just not asking him straight out, reverse the decree, but she's going to, again, I think, get him pretty well, as we would say today, loosened up. And you know, like a lot of people call it, attitude adjustment or whatever. Alcohol has been the vehicle for centuries, you know that. And so she's going to use the same thing. So she prepares a huge banquet. Verse 6, "And the king said unto Esther, At the banquet of wine, what is thy petition? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? Even to the half of the kingdom it shall be performed. Then answered Esther and said, My petition and my request is..." Here it comes. And you know how they did in the antiquities. I know this because I read a lot of archaeology stuff. And this is exactly how they wrote each other letters. They would just flower and just give all kinds of descriptions of how great they were. And so she does the same thing. "If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for them, and I will do tomorrow as the king hath said. So then Haman went forth joyful and with a glad heart. But when same Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was full of indignation," that's another word for wrath, "against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself, and when he came home, he sent and called for his friends, and Zeresh his wife, and he rehearsed all that was taking place between him and the king, and how he feels that one of these days he's going to be second in the kingdom. He's really flying high. Then verse 12, "Haman said, Moreover, yea, Esther the queen did let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared, but myself." You see how they like to lubricate their ego? I guess that's part of politics, isn't it? They just love to have their ego stroked and, as we say, just lifted up. And so Haman was just ecstatic that he alone would be in this banquet with the king and the queen. All right, then, but he says, all of this availeth me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting in the king's gate. He had such a hatred for Jews that even though he thought he was really making headway with the king, yet this just overwhelmed him, see? And so, verse 14. His wife and all his friends unto him said, let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak thou unto the king, that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou in merrily with the king unto the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and so he caused the gallows to be built. But now here God moves in. Yes, God moves in on the thinking of a king laying on his bed at night. And that night could not the king sleep, and he commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles. Now do you see why I made special note of that a few chapters back? What happened in that book of Chronicles? It was recorded how Mordecai had kept him from being killed by these two chamberlains. It was in the book, and now he reads it, see? Oh, the providence, the hand of God in everything, beloved. And it's no different today. It's not one whit different. God is in everything. Verse 2. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hand on the king. And the king said, what honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this? The king's servants that ministered said, well, nothing. The king said, who is in the court? Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. So the king's servant said, behold, Haman standeth in the court. And the king said, let him come in. So Haman came in, and the king said, what shall be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Now remember, Haman is all puffed up. He thinks he is about to become second man in the kingdom, see? And the stage is being set. And the king said, what shall be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor? And Haman thought in his heart, to whom would the king delight to do honor more than himself? So Haman answered the king, the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let the royal apparel be brought which the king used to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon. Now, this is almost comedy, isn't it? I love this little book after now spending all this time in it. And here this guy is thinking all this is going to happen to him. Let the white horse, or the horse that the king rideth upon, and the crown royal which is set upon his head, let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback throughout the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. All right, then, here it comes. Then the king said to Haman, make haste, take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew. Glorious, isn't it? Glorious. You know, someone has said, does God have a sense of humor? I think he does. Now, mostly, you know, even when I have the question come up, did Jesus ever smile or laugh in his earthly ministry? Well, we don't know that he did. And if he didn't, it was because of the sin of the world was the number one thing on his mind. And naturally, you know, you can't make light of things when you're thinking of that aspect of it. And the same way with God in general, you know. He's not willing that any should perish, and he looks at the wickedness of man. But yet I have to feel, especially in a situation like this, he does have a sense of humor. And so here Haman is being set up, he thinks, to bring in his own honor and glory, and then have it suddenly go to the Jew. Boy, that must have been a real hammer blow to the man's ego. And so, even so, do it to Mordecai the Jew in verse 10 that sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. In other words, you fulfill every detail, Haman. So verse 11, Haman took the apparel and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and brought him on horseback through the street of the city and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. And Mordecai came again to the king's gate. But Haman hasted to his house, mourning, having his head covered, I mean he is in complete sorrow. And Haman told Zeresh his wife and all his friends everything that had befallen him. And then said his wise men and Zeresh his wife, if Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews, before whom thou hast begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shalt surely fall before him. And while they were yet talking, came the king's chamberlains and hasted to bring Haman to the banquet that Esther had prepared. Now here's where Esther came in and began to set the stage for a reversal of the decree to destroy the Jew. So the king, verse 1 of chapter 7, the king and Haman came to the banquet with Esther the queen. And the king said again unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition, Queen Esther, and it shall be granted thee, and what is thy request? Then Esther the queen answered and said, if I had found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people, the Jews, now remember, at my request. For we are sold. The decree has gone out. We are sold, and I and my people are to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and as women, in other words, if we had just been sold into servitude, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, who is he, and where is he that dares presume in his heart to do so? In other words, to kill all the Jews. And Esther said, the adversary and the enemy. Now remember, there's only three people in that banquet, if I read right. The king, the queen, and Haman. And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. And the king, arising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, went into the palace garden. Now that's why I referred to the archaeological digs of this palace, and they could reconstruct according to the foundation stone that this was the floor plan of this palace. So this is all set in antiquity archaeologically. Verse 7, and so the king, arising in his wrath, went into the palace garden, and Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther the queen, for he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. Then the king returned out of the palace garden into the place of the banquet of wine, and Haman was fallen upon the couch, I feel, that they have been reclining on to eat and partake of their banquet. And so Haman was fallen upon the bed whereon Esther, let's see, did I miss something? No, that's right. And Haman was fallen upon the bed or the couch whereon Esther was. Then said the king, this is just about a repeat of Joseph and, back there in Egypt. And so he finds himself on the couch whereon Esther was. And then said the king, will he force the queen also before me in the house? As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And Harbona, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, behold, the gallows are 50 cubits high, which Haman had made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him thereon. So the very gallows that Haman had built, hoping to kill Mordecai, he hangs himself. And thus was the king's wrath pacified. Well, now we just keep right on going in chapter 8, and we'll finish the whole story of Esther this afternoon. So on that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jew's enemy, unto Esther the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what it was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, gave it to Mordecai, and Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell down at his feet, and besought him with tears, to put away the mischief of Haman the Agagite and his device that he had devised against the Jews. And again, the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. Esther arose and stood before the king and said, "If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seem right for the king, and I be pleasing his eye, let it be written." Now here it comes. "To reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews, which are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come to my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred?" Then the king said to Esther the queen, and to Mordecai the Jew, "Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Write you also for the Jews as it liketh you in the king's name. Seal it with the king's ring, for the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with his ring may no man reverse." And then were the king's scribes called in the third month, that is the month Sivan, on the 3rd and 20th day thereof. And it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded the Jews and to the lieutenants from India to Ethiopia, the 127 provinces, and every province according to the writing thereof, that the language to the Jews according to their writing and according to their language. Okay, now here we come. This is what I wanted you to see. The post office, everything was already operating clear back there 500 years before Christ. Verse 11, wherein the king granted the Jews which were in... No, verse 10, I'm sorry. And he wrote in the king's name and sealed it with the king's ring and sent letters by post on horseback, riders on mules and camels, and young dromedary. Boy, if that isn't the Pony Express, I don't know what is. And so all these riders went out all the way across the empire. Now picture that, all the way from India to around the Mediterranean, on the south and on the north, and all the posts were made aware of the king's reversal that would now put the Jew in the place of preeminence. Now verse 11, wherein the king granted the Jews which were in every city to gather themselves together and to stand for their life. And now it's reversed: to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. Upon one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is month Adar, that the copy of the writing for a commandment to be given in every province was published unto all people, that the Jews should be ready against that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. So the posts that rode upon mules and camels went out, hastened and pressed on by the king's commandment. And the decree was given at Shushan, the palace. And Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, a great crown of gold, with a garment of fine linen and purple, and the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. And in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day, and many of the people of the land became Jews. In other words, even some of the Gentiles came in and began to embrace the Jews' religion, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. Well, anyway, as we go through the rest of this chapter, and we find that the vengeance is turned from killing the Jews to killing all those who hated them, and the Jews come back into a place of preeminence. Now, verse 5 of chapter 9. Thus the Jews smote all their enemies with the stroke of the sword, and slaughter and destruction. Now, see, this is contrary to our line of thinking. But all the way back into antiquity, especially in the Middle East, just like you see it today. What is their favorite statement? The Arabs love death and the Jews love life. Just think of that. And you're seeing it every day. They love death. But the Jews, on the other hand, love life. Hey, it's no secret. The Jews know how to live sumptuously. They always have. They've been stricken in poverty a good portion of their history. But on the other hand, they have the wherewithal. They know how to live sumptuously. And so here again, the whole thing is reversed. And now the Jews are in the place of killing their enemies. And then down to verse 10, the 10 sons of Haman. Now this is the end of the Amalekites, historically speaking. This is where God finally said, this is the end of the Amalekites. And so the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews, they slew. But on the spoil they laid not their hand. On that day, the number of those that were slain in Shushan the palace was brought before the king. And the king said unto Esther the queen, the Jews have slain and destroyed 500 men in the palace. And the 10 sons of Haman, what have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now what is thy petition, and it shall be granted thee, or what is thy request further, and it shall be done? Then said Esther, if it please the king, let it be granted to the Jews who are in Shushan to do tomorrow, also according unto this day's decree, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged upon the gallows. And the king commanded it to be done, and the decree was given, and they hanged Haman's 10 sons, which, like I said, that brought an end then to the Amalekites, which King Saul should have ended himself hundreds and hundreds of years earlier. Verse 15, for the Jews that were in Shushan gathered themselves together on the 14th day also the month Adar, slew the 100 men at Shushan, but on the prey they laid death their hand. But the other Jews that were gathered in the king's provinces gathered themselves together and stood for their lives, and had rest from their enemies, slew of their foes 75,000, but they laid not their hands on the prey. And on the 13th day of the month Adar, and on the 14th day of the same rested day, and made it a day of feasting and gladness. And now we'll pick that up in our final half hour, and we'll find that it is a feast day that is still celebrated in Israel today. And the name of the day is Purim, P-U-R-I-M. And it is still celebrated traditionally by Jews, going all the way back to the time of Queen Esther. Interesting, not like I normally like to teach, but hopefully this is just a little interlude, and we're going to be going into the minor prophets in our next study.
Thank you for watching Through the Bible with Les Feldick. Through the Bible is a partner-supported ministry. If this program has been a help to your study of the Scriptures and you'd like to see others enjoy the teaching, your support would be greatly appreciated. Write to us at Les Feldick Ministries, 30706 West Lona Valley Road, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or call 1-800-369-7856. Remember, all programs are available in printed form, audio cassette, and videotape. Be sure to tune in next time to Through the Bible with Les Feldick.